You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
This is New Hampshire Now on 914.50 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program this hour. The show is presented by New England College as well as the Prescription Center. And this segment of the show brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's uniquely New Hampshire. For more information, check out rathlaw.com. We're inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio with an individual that is creating a lot of excitement and rising in the polls here in New Hampshire as well as across the country. He is Andrew Yang. We were just talking about the fact that one of your first interviews when you were running for president was right here in this studio. I don't remember. I think it was a year and a half ago at this point.
It was a year and a half ago. So candidates have to know you do this show. You rock it to the top of the polls. I owe all my success to hanging out with you here, Chris.
And that's clear, obviously.
Quote Andrew Yang.
One of the things that's that stood out to me from the very beginning, and to be quite honest, you don't know where candidates are going to go.
I didn't know
if you were going to have success or not. I liked your message. And the thing that stood out the most is that a lot of the political figures that come in here are reactionary. And you were, in a lot of ways, and this might be a bit of a stretch, but I'm sure you'll take it, a visionary in some ways.
Wow.
In that you...
Tell my wife.
In that you were looking at the horizon and seeing what the future was going to be in regards to jobs, where America was headed. And your book highlights a lot of that as well. And also speaking in a language that's different than that of the political figures in this race. In some ways, was that what catapulted you to get into this? Where it's always frustrating to me when political figures will take the news of the day and say, gun control. We're going to talk about this today, but we're going to react to what's taking place as opposed to pushing forth a plan to address not just the issues of today, but of tomorrow.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, where millions of Americans despair that our government is behind the curve, is not answering the real challenges of this time. It's, in my mind, one of the main reasons Donald Trump's our president today, mm-hmm. is that Americans looked up and said, we need something different. Our career politicians are never going to solve these problems because they're just going to react to the headline of the day. They're just going to go to their cable news appearances and fundraising dinners while the problems just get worse and worse. And so, to me, the biggest problems are climate change and the fact that our economy is evolving in ways that it's going to push more and more people here in New Hampshire and around the country to the sidelines. And you can see it manifest in the numbers, but also in the fact that suicides and drug overdoses have now overtaken vehicle deaths, the leading cause of death, first time in American history, to the point where our collective life expectancy has declined for the last 3 years. Things are going very badly in many, many communities. That's one of the reasons Donald Trump is our president. So we have to try and solve the real problems on the ground. That's been the approach of my campaign, and I believe it's a reason why we're taking off.
You released a climate policy here in New Hampshire, which takes a look at this from a multifaceted level and is, again, one of those plans that looks towards the future while also addressing things that are taking place today. And I think that I don't quite understand why there's a pushback that ever occurs in regards to green jobs and creating a green economy when we look at where our economy is headed at this point in time. Take us through the particularly that aspect of things and the green jobs side of things and the need for that, given what you've discussed in great detail about where trucking jobs are headed, where automation and artificial intelligence are heading. Are green jobs sustainable jobs as well?
Yeah, that has to be the path forward. We already automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. And now we're doing the same thing to retail jobs, call center jobs, fast food jobs, and most disastrously, pretty soon, truck driving jobs. Mm-hmm. My friends in California are working on cars and trucks that can drive themselves. While driving a truck is the most common job in New Hampshire and 28 other states, 3.5 million Americans drive trucks for a living. And another 7 million Americans work at truck stops, motels, and diners that rely upon the truckers getting out and having a mm-hmm. meal. So when you see on the horizon that these massive changes are occurring in our economy, and our politicians don't want to touch it. We're in the midst of what experts are calling the fourth industrial revolution. I bet you've never heard a politician say the words fourth industrial mm-hmm. revolution till just now. And I'm barely a politician. So the green jobs we have to look at it over our history. We've subsidized the fossil fuel industry to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars. And now the unfortunate misconception tug of war we're in is that people look up and say moving towards renewable source of energy will be bad for the economy. It will make things more expensive. It will cost American jobs. But again, one, we subsidize fossil fuels in their infancy. And two, we have to start creating the jobs that are going to help keep our economy moving, including the ability to export some of these green technologies to other countries. And GDP as an economic measuring stick is something we made up almost 100 years ago. And it's the wrong measurement for us today because, right, again, our life expectancy has declined for 3 years in a row while GDP has gone to record highs. And so if you present something to like moving to renewable technologies as like, oh, it's going to be quote unquote bad for the economy, it actually can be very good for the economy.
Yeah, GDP and unemployment rates are the two most annoying
data points. Man, yeah, you're smart enough to know that they're really super misleading. And one of the examples I used earlier today, if a hurricane comes down and knocks down Concord,
you're
going
to nuke it, right?
No. I wouldn't
just
nuke
like
the hurricane.
The president.
But if the hurricane comes and knocks down Concord, New Hampshire, that's actually positive for GDP because we then have to spend a lot of money rebuilding. And so it's like, right, ooh, more stuff got produced, which is obviously insane. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So we need to have better measurements that actually include what economists call negative externalities. So if you have fossil fuels that make the earth warmer, that ends up costing trillions of dollars in damage in coastal communities, then who pays for that? Like, that has to be the cost you factor in.
How urgent is the need to do something in regards to the climate? And there's some disagreement amongst even scientists on this, but in particular presidential candidates on this about when we need to act. Jay Inslee was in the race and made this his
signature issue
and said, this is it. Like, the next president, the next 4 to 8 years, if we don't do something to reverse this trend, that's going to be it for the world. Are you in that boat, or do you feel that there is more time, there's more nuance to it? How do you feel?
There's a whole spectrum, Chris. So unfortunately, I am with Jay Inslee and others that things are even worse than most people believe. As a couple of data points, just to throw some out there that just came out, the UN just released a study saying that we're going to be okay if 80% of the world goes vegetarian immediately, which I don't foresee happening. I like my meat too. Another study came out saying that Greenland's ice pack is melting at the rate projected in 2070 today, 51 years earlier. So the data is very daunting. And the last 4 years have been the four warmest years in recorded history already. I was just in Portsmouth earlier today, and they told me that 2,000 residences are now flooding regularly. And a multi-million-dollar shrimp business has gone to zero. Mm-hmm. So these changes are real. They're immediate. They're with us right now. If we don't act over the next number of years, certainly climate change is set to accelerate. But the brutal truth is that the United States of America is only 15% of global emissions. So if we were to do everything right within our own borders, but, for example, the Amazon had giant fires that were deforesting it, mm-hmm, and Africa continued to use coal-burning plants and whatnot, unfortunately, we could still be in for an extraordinarily difficult time for Americans, even if we did everything right within our own country.
So building a green world is going to, is one of your key components of this, is, in my view, going to require either some sort of a existential type event, which is going to create urgency, or it's going to require a generational change in mindset. Take as an example, paper straws. People grumble about the paper straws or the...
I have to confess, I find the paper straws somewhat irritating. Exactly. They kind of crumble.
I found someone already who... And there's only two people here who doesn't like the paper straws. People, don't want to not have their plastic shopping bags. Just things that people are just used to doing. And again, these are kind of just, existential... Not existential. These are very small aspects of a greener world. But people don't like to change their habits. And so it's going to require a instilling of a younger generation, new habits, trying to get, individuals who are my age and older to change their habits. So how does that take place? And how do you start to turn the tide of something that's been, going on for many years?
No, it's interesting, Chris, and this is one of the reasons why I think climate change gets a bad rap. Because frankly, if you were to come to me and say, hey, your job is to stop eating meat, just use plastic straws and never use a plastic bag, then I'm going to find it mildly irritating at best. You know, it's going to be like, oh, that's a drag. It's not about
and you're likely to push back and say, why? Why do I trust this information that you're giving me?
Right. What we have to do is we have to try and focus on the biggest sources of emission and climate change, which frankly is probably not, you know, my plastic bag at the grocery store.
Right.
You know,
but vehicles and travel.
Yes. You got to go to where the needle moving can be very significant very quickly.
Power.
Another part about building a greener world is that we have these massive fires in the Amazon with the lungs of the world and supply 20% of the world's oxygen. We need to go to some parts of the world that are up for this, which will be many of them, and say, look, we'd like to plant a lot of trees in some of your emptier tracts of land. Mm-hmm. And guess what? We'll pay you a little bit of money to mind the woodlands that we're leaving behind, and we're going to do this because it's positive for the environment and there'll be a carbon offset involved. We have to stop not just trying to do less of the bad. We have to do more of the good. There's a study that just came out that said the Atlantic Ocean is losing 4 to 8% of its biomass every year, which is a catastrophe. And it's part of the reason why some of the coastal communities are now having to shift their or abandon their fishing businesses. So we need to start reseeding the ocean with microalgae that can help revitalize some of the ecosystems. So it's not just, hey, let's irritate the heck out of everyone and just make everyone's life a little bit more annoying. It's let's go to where the numbers are big and try and solve problems in a way that'll actually preserve the earth more effectively.
It, we've seen a significant decrease in fishermen on the seacoast here in New Hampshire for a number of reasons, and the economic reasons, environmental reasons, and for some of the reasons that you described as well there in regards to the environment. That's Andrew Yang joining us here inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio, Democratic candidate for president. In concluding here, I want to talk a little about the economy with you. And you know, the economy to me has always been, not always been, for the last number of years, kind of a house of cards. And I'm very concerned about the amount of debt, whether it's student loan debt, whether it's our national debt, business debt, credit card debt. You can go on down the line. And we're an economy, as you're referencing before, that's moving more and more towards automation and a service industry type of sector. But if we're not making anything, if we're imposing trade tariffs on China and still not making anything, where does this economy head? And if there is a downturn, which many independent analysts suggest there will be
at some point in the relatively near future,
it seems that, and I don't want to be overly Chicken Little-ish, but it seems that this could be fairly catastrophic given the amount of debt that individuals are carrying and how much the government has sunk into the tax cuts most recently.
We have been kicking the can down the road for decades in so many respects. Infrastructure is an obvious one. Like, we're still living off the investments made in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And you're 100% right that what was our response to the financial crisis? Print $4 trillion for the Wall Street banks. Mm-hmm. What was Trump's tax cut in effect? $1.5 trillion for big companies. Workers saw very, very little of that. And we just keep on deferring our issues, building up the national debt, printing money, pushing money out through the Fed into the stock market and coastal real estate markets and other places. And your description of it as a house of cards, I probably wouldn't go that far, but it's not that far off in that we've built an economy that's much more speculative and second order mm-hmm. than it would have been a couple generations ago. It's left us in a tough spot. We have to try to get back to first principles and see what we can do to move people and energy and capital towards solving the real problems of this time in a way that would make us stronger, healthier, mentally healthier, clean up our air and water, make our kids stronger and more successful. Those are the real problems of today. And a lot of it really is a measurement problem where we just keep on parroting GDP and stock market growth and headline unemployment when all three of those measurements are somewhere between deeply flawed and completely disastrous.
So in conclusion, and obviously this is hypothetical because you don't know which sectors of the economy could create, you can't say with complete certainty which areas of the economy would create a downturn, but what would be your reaction as president? Do you bail out again if it is a banking issue? How do you go about stabilizing the economy given where we are as a nation and what we owe China?
The biggest move we have to make is to build a trickle-up economy from our people, families, and communities up. And this is the microcosm. I'll give you a sense. Financial crisis, 2008. So the economy is collapsing, and we had a choice then and there. It was either print $4 trillion for the banks or forgive some of the mortgage debt that's out there and keep more Americans in their homes. And we all know we chose the banks.
Mm-hmm.
And we also know none of us voted on that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was a crisis, and so people did what they had to do. But to me, the obvious measure is to put more money directly into people's hands, because we know the vast majority of Americans would spend that money in our communities. The money would circulate over and over again. We have to move towards a trickle-up economy instead of a trickle-down economy that we know doesn't work.
Andrew, great to see you. As always, look forward to catching up with you again here on the campaign trail in New Hampshire.
Thanks, Chris. Great being back, man. You're the turbo boost. You're why we're going to win.
Andrew Yang here on New Hampshire Now. 1-9-1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. This hour, the program presented by New England College, as well as the Prescription Center, and that segment of the show brought to you by Rathjung and Pignatelli.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.